from Directions Media. This is a special topics podcast. This is Adina Schutzberg. This week, Safe Software announced a new partnership with WeoGeo aimed at bringing spatial ETL, that's extract, transform, and load technology, to the cloud. This podcast is an interview with principals from the two companies explaining the announcement, explaining what cloud computing is, and explaining what you can expect as we move more of geospatial into the cloud. I have on the line today Don Murray, the president of Safe Software, and Paul Bissett, the CEO of WeoGeo. And we're going to talk today about their big announcement this July having to do with cloud computing. And Paul, can you help us understand what cloud computing is in general?
Cloud computing at its base level is kind of like the utility systems for electricity. It's where you can go and purchase compute services in a pay-by-the-drink or pay-by-the-use model. And it really takes processing, disk storage, and web services out of the desktop or server environment and places them in the hands of a larger vendor. In our case, we use a lot of Amazon services as well as Google Apps for the applications that we had used to run within our own local data center. And we pay both Amazon and Google for the specific usage of their services, either on a timed wall clock basis on the processing or a price per disk storage space on a monthly basis. Or in the case of Google's, we use their application suite. You know, it's an annual fee to be involved in that.
Now, you're in turn using those cloud services, and now you're providing services out to the world, geospatially related services in particular.
In our case, we have developed a platform for exchanging geo-content for marketplaces and financial services of that exchange of that geo-content, for search and discovery and distribution of the geo-content, all on a cloud-based platform. Now, what that means is we could absorb all of the platform requirements, the buying of the computers, the buying of the disk space, the running of our own racks within our own local computer center or data center, or we could go to a co-location facilities to do that and, you know, stand up racks within a co-location facility. Instead, what we've chosen to do is take our entire architecture for running our services for our customers and put it into a cloud compute environment. In this case, we've taken all of that software infrastructure and overlaid it on top of the services that Amazon Web Services offers. Now, what that allowed us to do is to move from a hardware-intensive, maintenance-intensive environment for our service architecture and offload all of those expenses and personnel hours, so people we had to deal with to run that architecture, and give that underlying muck, if you will, of dealing just with computer infrastructure, and we gave that to Amazon, and we pay them on a per-use basis for bandwidth, for storage, and for processing time. What it allowed us to do then is focus all of our efforts on developing our applications for our customers.
Now, Don, at Safe, I think we just started talking about web services and FME as a FME server
yes,
back at your user conference last fall.
This partnership with WeoGeo really requires FME server to even be possible. So it really enables us to take FME server to another deployment model. And so we've been following the cloud and reading up on the cloud, and it's really, we see the cloud as something very important in the future for our users and also for Safe.
Before you go any further, let me make sure that our listeners know exactly what FME Server is.
FME Server is a product that enables users to share spatial ETL tasks or deploy spatial ETL tasks on a server environment, so then they can, and spatial ETL is the idea of being able to take data from wherever it is, be able to read, access that data, whether it be in a database or on local or on a via web service, bring that data in and transform it so that the data is in a form that it can be immediately usable. More and more organizations are using multiple GIS or other tools, and our whole stick is to enable, we want users to be able to use whatever tool they is best for the job, no matter where the data is. So really we try to, you know, marry the data wherever it is to the application so users can immediately. So with FME Server now, what we're able to do is easily publish spatial ETL operations that take data and move them to an application or make them available to the application, to a server, and then they can be shared via, you know, a simple web interface or easily be incorporated into some other enterprise-type environment.
So the picture that I had at your user conference last fall was that some of your users might install FME Server in their local enterprise implementation and then have all their different users hitting it for all the different kinds of things that they needed to do.
That's right, that's right. So in the past, you know, there were very few people who had access to the spatial ETL processing. Now with FME Server, effectively anybody in an organization who has access to a web page can start to use FME and run these spatial ETL transformation tasks.
So what's different now that you're talking about putting the server functionality, the FME functionality, into the cloud?
And that's really what's got us excited, because now to have FME Server, certainly an organization could set up a website that has this available to the outside world. But, of course, then they have to, as it goes back to what Paul said, now they would have to, you know, set up their own IT environment. They would have to have people to run it, or they'd have to co-locate it. But the point is they'd have to physically own that all that hardware and all that infrastructure. And, of course, there's peak times. So just like our highways where they're built for the peak times, because then that's probably, you know, in the middle of the day, there's some peak time. So they have to have enough hardware and enough resources sitting there to handle that entire peak time so that the performance was fine during the peak time. Of course, in the non-peak time, you got all that computing resources and disk just sitting there, not being effectively used. So by pushing it to the cloud, now organizations they don't have to stand up their own hardware. They don't have to worry about, you know, 24/7 support. They just push it all to the cloud, and the cloud can dynamically grow and shrink at runtime depending on the load of the system. So if the system's really big, this now we're working with WheelGeo, they have the technology to spin up multiple machines so the server can effectively grow to handle the load, and then when the requests drop off, the server can start to collapse to run on fewer boxes. So you have this dynamic ability that we're pretty excited about.
Now, it sounds like this whole deployment to the cloud is going to happen in sort of phases. And the first one has to do with data access via WheelGeo. Is that right, Paul?
When we looked out over the horizon to really make the WheelGeo marketplace successful, what became clear to us is the transformations are going to be a key part of what we want to do.
So this idea of putting the data in exactly the form that somebody's going to use it that Don just mentioned.
If we can provide that to both the sellers or the providers of the geo content, that functionality that, here's not 11 different file formats that you can distribute in, and here's over 200. And the user on the other side can say, well, you know, I really don't care the package that you created this content in, because I'm assured of getting it in the form that I need it for my application, then suddenly the marketplace services are only that much stronger for our customers.
Okay, so the first thing that WheelGeo users are going to see as this rolls out is some new transformation tools that allow them to take full advantage of all of what's in FME Server. Do I understand that right?
That's correct. You're going to be able to, not just with raster, but also vector data, put it up and get it down however you want it.
When might people start seeing the FME tools as part of WheelGeo?
I think that certainly we'd like to see something first quarter of 2009, but a lot of it, you know, we've gotten through the business part of what SAFE and WheelGeo are going to do. Now we got to get through the technology.
Right. And Don, what's the next step after that?
Well, as Paul says, the first step is to get our technology into the cloud. And the thing that WeoGeo brought to the table that was incredibly valuable for us is that we are constantly working to be agnostic, database agnostic, operating system agnostic. And we looked at the cloud and we thought, geez, you know, we always want to make sure we're ready for the next wave. So that's why we did server. And then we look at the cloud. Oh, now we have server. And when we were architecting server, we read up on the cloud to make sure that our server could be put in the cloud. And so then the thing is there's so many different clouds out there and more coming on all the time. So to remain agnostic, we were looking at, you know, a number of different different cloud implementations. And we were thinking, oh boy, now we're going to need another team to just totally worry about how can we put our FME server and support all these different clouds. And then, you know, and that's a no-brainer when we found out about WeoGeo. Basically, now they can take that whole headache off of us. We have enough headaches just worrying about supporting all these changing formats, new transformations, and new database types, and that sort of thing. Once we get it in the cloud, then, you know, then we'll have a new, once we can do this, then there'll be a new offering for our users. So if we have a user that comes to us and says, you know, I really want to set up an FME server, but I want 24/7 and I don't have this budget to set up, hire all the staff that I'm going to need and buy all the equipment, then we can just point them at WeoGeo and say, hey, no problem, you can deploy it in the cloud. And WeoGeo knows how to do that, so we can just refer our customers to an organization that knows exactly what the cloud's about, how to do that, and then we'll be able to discuss with the client the pluses and minuses of the different cloud implementations.
Okay, so there's really two different things going on here.
Yeah.
One is the implementation of the server technology as part of WeoGeo, of that marketplace.
Yeah.
And the other is the opportunity for clients to take advantage of WeoGeo's expertise in implementing something like server in the cloud.
That's right. And that was something we wanted to do anyway because we recognize, you know, the cloud is, you know, I mean, I work on my Mac and so I live there. And so I see, geez, you know, and you got this iPhone thing coming out or came out in Canada now. And so those devices are perfect for stuff that's in the cloud. It has to be in the cloud to be really effective.
Now, what are you two seeing about the geospatial community's understanding and use of the cloud? I've personally just moved to a Mac, and the reason I could do it is because some huge percentage of what I do in my work is in the cloud. But I'm using a whole bunch of free cloud services, like tools from Google. Certainly Directions Media has a whole implementation that it hosts that I basically work off of their server. I feel like I'm already 90% in the cloud. Where is the rest of the geospatial community on this?
I think the geospatial industry is moving there as well. You know, the number one tool we demo with, of course, is the free Google Earth. And so we have all these demos, and users get excited when they see all that fantastic content with, you know, whether it be Google Earth or Poly9s or Arc Explorer, whatever. But having that context and all that information is coming from the cloud. It's kind of funny. When I go to a trade show now, I absolutely have to have an internet connection to do my demos, because without the internet connection, they're, you know, users are just, they're underwhelmed, because now it just comes as this expectation that, of course, you're going to have this fantastic global view of things, and you can zoom in and out and do all those fancy things that these web mapping tools go. So I think in the GIS industry, the cloud is already here, and how they can exploit the cloud all the way down to personal devices and things like that. I think this just takes it to the next level, and, you know, the organizations don't have to have their own infrastructure. So we want to have this thing where it truly is, you know, even the deployments in the cloud, not just the user experiences, is from the cloud.
Is that what you're seeing, Paul? Because I have to say that I think when I ran into you a year and a half or so ago, that was you were really the first person who was talking about taking advantage of the Amazon infrastructure as a core part of your company's implementation.
Yeah, I think that what you're seeing from the user standpoint is that people are demanding internet services more and more for their everyday business operations. And so where the technology exists in terms of hardware space is really not relevant to the user. They just need internet connection to get there. The difference in terms of thinking about the cloud comes from the provider of that service. You know, for the user, when you point to an internet address, that service could reside on somebody's metal. It could be the metal in their own data center. It could be the metal in a colocation center. Or it could be as an abstraction of their architecture on a cloud utility vendor like Amazon Web Services. Previously, we had quote-unquote cloud services for the user, but they were either in a colocation facility or they were out of a company's local data center. Now, moving forward, the people who are providing those services to the end user can abstract their architecture and release themselves from having to manage the metal. And I think that that's going to be the next shift in, cloud adoption, is that now that the users get it and demand it, you running around with your Mac wanting to do services just on the internet, or Don at trade shows where everybody's saying, I got to have the internet to do my trade show or to see the products, you're now going to see the enterprises begin to approach the utility cloud vendors and say, all right, I'm tired of running the metal, or running the metal isn't as cost effective as it once was. Let's explore other options. I think that adoption, just by the very nature of enterprise businesses and enterprise IT departments, will be a little more conservative in its approach. However, the more it starts pushing in that direction, you'll see an acceleration of the software as a services model that really takes advantage of the network effects of people being, from a user standpoint, in the cloud.
So basically, I think what you're both saying is you're already in the cloud, whether you think about it or not, when you're working with your client GIS package that's tuned into some back end, be it Google Earth or Arc Web Services or something like that. And now maybe what needs to happen is you need to think about whether there are other things that should be living in the cloud to take full advantage of taking that responsibility out of your organization and placing it in an Amazon or a Google or someplace like that. Well, thank you both, Don Murray from Safe Software and Paul Bissett from WeoGeo. You can learn more about this announcement and cloud computing and what Safe and WeoGeo are doing at the GeoWeb Conference, which will be held July 21st to 25th in Vancouver. Thanks for joining us and telling us about the new world of the cloud and geospatial.
Thank you very much, Adina.
Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.